Welcome back. We are diminished in numbers. We're down to four, and we lost Chris and Mike and Kate, but the rest of us struggle on, and we're helped by a wonderful wife.
At that point, half the people have just switched off and thought, "Let's listen to something else."
Nothing like a bit of banter.
Monica's back.
Yay. Yeah, Monica's back. Yay. And there's Monica's back. I feel we'll start off just. Unfortunately, Mike and Kate aren't here, but we shared an experience just after Christmas time when we went into London, and it was a time where there was a news story. It was right at the beginning of it. In fact, we were probably the first to really do something about it from our community point of view, and that is what was going on at St James Piccadilly. St James Piccadilly is a Church of England church near Piccadilly Circus. It has a very dodgy background and reputation. I remember going there 20 years ago with a group of three of us, and we did some secret filming. And even then, it was so heavily into the New Age. They were openly having sort of classes in Buddhism and meditation. And this is in the Church of England church. It was thoroughly New Age centred in those days. Well, it's still New Age centred. It has a female vicar. Apparently, is very ambitious.
Make it New Age, having a female
vicar. Yeah, that's the buzz. All right, okay, I'm not reading from the script, but that's not the point. The point is that they decided, as a Christmas sort of exhibition to mark the birth of Christ, they thought they will pretend they are Bethlehem and create a life size. And I'm putting question. Speech marks here, a wall, a sort of brick wall. Was it made of brick? I don't know.
Concrete
wall that totally obscured the front of the church, and it's meant to represent the wall outside Bethlehem. Now, we could go into politics and history and all that, but we probably don't have time for that. It's just the horror of actually seeing that at Christmas time, seeing a church making a political message that is a very provocative message, considering anti-Semitism that seems to be in the church these days. It just seemed to be following the trend, the negative trend against Israel and Jewish people. It became a rallying point for those who opposed Israel, plus those who are pro-Israel, in the sense of you go on Facebook and there are literally wars being fought about this. Why is this wall been put in front of this church? And loads of fantastic articles. Melanie Phillips for the Mail wrote an article about it. A lot of friends we know wrote articles. But the sort of the climax of the whole thing was they had a debate on the Saturday as part of a festival. And two friends of ours actually got into the debate. Others, like a friend of Adam, who was wearing an Israeli T-shirt or something.
Badge
on his shirt. Wasn't allowed in because of that reason. And it was, I don't know who was on who was doing the debate, but the tone of the debate was just so anti-Israel, anti-God, that our friends, one of them, who's not a shy person, I suppose, but she was so moved that she spent a lot of the time just shouting from the back, to saying she could not believe the hatred that was pouring out from this panel against Israel, and that she just felt she had to. So that is our opening statement.
Do we know the response of the Archbishop of Canterbury?
No. Didn't actually go into, you know, how it affected the church at large. All I know is it never became a news story, which sort of indicates apathy. You know, if it become a debating point, then at least it means people were thinking about it.
Letters were sent.
Letters were sent
to the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Oh yes, yeah. Letters were sent, but I don't know about his response.
I think that he might have taken the view that it's a bit of a storm in a teacup, especially with other things that are going on at the moment. So in that sense, perhaps it's a bit of a non-event. But it does, I suppose, raise the interesting question: how, you know, we respond to something like this. Do we frankly ignore it because it is so way out,
yeah,
so off-centre? Do we just say, well, you know, do we just shrug our shoulders and say, well, that's the way that some religious people are going to go? Or do we engage with it? And if so, how do we engage with it? I mean, obviously going and shouting is perhaps not a brilliant way of...
Well, she didn't go there. She didn't go there with the intention of shouting, but she was just so riled. In fact, she wasn't given the opportunity to say anything.
Which is plainly, I guess, part of the agenda.
Yeah.
That other people are not going to have the opportunity to respond.
The other thing was that people were given the opportunity to write things on the wall. So they had felt-tip pens available for anyone. One phrase really struck me, and it was a slogan that the Palestinians have used, that the militant Palestinians have used. It simply says, from the river to the sea. It probably won't mean anything to most people, but what they actually mean is we will get rid of all the Jews from the Mediterranean Sea to the River Jordan, wipe them out. That's a sort of, it's a battle cry.
Yes.
And that was on the wall, not got rid of. It was a blatant anti-Semitic thing. And they said, you know, the organisers said, of course, we wouldn't allow any incendiary messages. The fact that they didn't even know that that was an anti-Semitic just shows the ignorance.
Or did they simply pretend not to know? Did they turn a blind eye
probably,
to it?
Probably, but very, very, it wasn't obscure. It was very, you can actually
prominent.
See it. Yeah, very prominent.
Mm. There's sort of different levels to events like this, aren't there? There are those that organise it, know exactly what it's about. They're at the heart of it. And there are those that are sort of innocent, if you like, innocent bystanders who were, I would think, the majority of those volunteers that were outside giving out the leaflets, because it's a shame Kate's not
well,
here,
all
but
innocent.
She spoke to you know, a couple of people, and I heard from somebody else that spoke to somebody that was outside. And basically, you look at the internet or you get a newsletter and it's asking for volunteers to come hand out some leaflets to do with justice, to do, you know, a Christmas event, and, you know, asking for volunteers. And so you think, well, that sounds like a good thing to do. You go outside, you're not informed about exactly the, you know, the whole situation. And they're there giving out the leaflets. Now there are passers-by, there are tourists, there are people that just walking past, see this wall, come in, have a look, what's this about? Leaves an impression. And that's the danger, is the impression that people are walking past that will form an impression on you know, if they see something on the news, that will leave a lasting impression and will help them to form an opinion about something. That's the danger. Those sort of repercussions, aren't there?
And there's a lot of tourists. It's Piccadilly, so there's a lot of tourists would have seen that. And that's the thing, you know, for propaganda reasons, that message got a very big audience.
It was a propaganda coup, wasn't it? I mean, it's a real...
It's just awful.
Unfortunately,
just,
very negative.
One of the problems we're faced with is that what's being taught in schools is, quite frankly, anti-Semitic. So I think what you were saying earlier, when we were talking... that education is key.
And
a little plug for your little DVD.
Do you know, education and propaganda, I visited a school a couple of years ago, and I think it must have been the 60th anniversary of the dropping of the atomic bomb. And I went through all the material that children had put up, and I had this distinct impression that they had somehow gained the impression that the Japanese were innocent of the Second World War, and that the atomic bombs were an American aggressive attack. Nothing that I saw in terms of the material that children had put up led me away from that view, that that is the way that that particular piece of history, in inverted commas, had been presented to them. Now, if something, you might say, is straightforward in one sense and as black and white as that, is presented in that totally partisan way, and children are absorbing this. What hope on something perhaps a bit more deep
and
complex?
That looks like a real liberal agenda, then, perhaps.
I would have thought
going
so.
Going against the evil aggressors, USA.
Yes. I mean, awful, and of course, that chimes in with this other subtext, which is A, we all hate the Americans, which is where so much of the liberal church is, and B, the Americans support these evil people called the Israelis. You know, so it's all part of one perhaps bigger picture.
It is,
tragically.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, partly of what I was sort of thinking about as well, is that when you look at the whole picture, there are those that are in control of, you know, that they know what agenda they have, where they're going, and those that are led astray by those leaders as well. Thinking about which trust is it, the
Amos?
Can we say it?
Amos.
Yeah. I would think that they were the ones that put out the publicity for volunteers. I mean, that there were lots of sponsors, weren't
there? Actually, that is their headquarters, actually, at that church. And in fact, they are going to be at the exhibition we're going to next week as well.
Yeah.
Garth Hewitt. Garth Hewitt,
yeah.
The singer. He'll be at the... And very anti-Israel.
Is he?
Extremely. Yeah, and that's his ministry, Amos Trust. And it's all about justice and righteousness. Or justice, sorry, not righteousness. So Israel is one of their bugbears, let's say.
It's the church at Stirling does a fantastic job at just reversing the tide. Like they have their night
so
on Israel.
It's amazing, you know, they're doing that because they're so alone.
Completely.
Yeah.
And the Israel embassy send a whole cohort of people up.
Yeah.
I mean, this year, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu actually wrote to this little tiny church, this little tiny church in the middle of Stirling.
And this singer-songwriter wrote this song for it, and it was fantastic. What's her name? I can't remember her name. was it Jo? Jo Pulliston, wasn't it? I can't remember her name.
But seriously, though, the highlight of the whole evening for me was when we were singing Amazing Grace, accompanied by the bagpipes.
Oh, yeah, the bagpipes. Yeah.
And some of the rabbis were completely astounded. They actually were saying amongst themselves, well, we need this passion in our synagogues. And they were completely blown away by it.
Yeah.
And they were so touched that any church would have an evening to celebrate Israel. So it's coming in the opposite spirit, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it, for me, the highlight was when that letter you mentioned was read out. To see the look on John's face when he got given this letter from Netanyahu. You know, a tiny little church in a tiny little town in a tiny little country, you know, of Scotland, would actually get a personal letter from, you know, the Prime Minister of Israel. It's amazing. And it just shows this is one man's vision. You know, he didn't have to do what he's doing, you know, John. He could just have an ordinary church and, you know, he teaches, you know, the correct way of reading the Bible, etc. But he doesn't have to have this stand for Israel, but he does. It's a personal thing for him. And it's made him quite unpopular in the local area. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, this Night to Honour Israel has done like 4 years in a row now. Yeah. Totally, you know, self-financing. And it's just amazing.
Israel, you know, values friends. And I think they're very well aware of the atmosphere within the churches, what happened at St James's. I'm sure
they know about that.
They know about everything that's happening, but they really value the support and love and friendship of people because it seems so rare.
Some of the embassy staff said that this Night to Honour Israel was a real recharging of the batteries evening because every other meeting they go to is full of criticism and insults.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that they get... It must be very confusing for a Jew, a secular Jew, to say, here's the Christian church. You know, they either love Israel or hate Israel. You know, it just seems they see both extremes. They see the St. James and they see Stirling. And they think, but they're all Christians and surely they all follow the same God and they all follow Jesus. And yet they've interpreted in different ways.
And they all follow the same scriptures.
Yeah.
But supposedly. In a totally different way.
Yeah.
So obviously, you can see from that really that Satan has a strategy, because if the Jewish people look upon a church that would say, you know, Jesus is the Messiah, and we're saying, you know, Jesus is your Messiah, he's Yeshua, you know, the Messiah, but they see this division within the church. Surely it must be a tactic of Satan to,
of course,
capture, if you like, ensnare part of the church to be so against Israel.
But that's been right from the start.
Yeah.
Christian anti-Semitism.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you can see this is just another
manifestation of the
Absolutely.
Same thing.
Another way of doing it, because how can they be attracted to a saviour that produces people that hate Israel?
Yeah.
So it can't make sense. So,
but that has been the key strategy of Satan all through the ages, is to blind Jews to their own Messiah by making the followers of the Jewish Messiah such a bad witness that they couldn't possibly want to follow him. It's such an irony, you know, that Jews were being killed in the name of another Jew. And that's how Jews would see it.
Well, maybe we can just summarise it in this way by saying it's been a highly effective strategy.
Yeah, it has.
And it continues.
It continues
to be, sadly.
Yeah, finds new ways to express itself. Yeah.
We've